Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The significance of that song is that Michael Heck comes to us from the parking lot at the Sheraton Hotel as he waits to attend the Metropolitan Crime Commission luncheon today, honoring many law enforcement officials and the work that they do.
Thank you. No, I was going to say that Newell Norman, like Michael Jackson, is a man who has perfect pitch, but... You gave the real explanation.
I actually do like Michael Jackson's music. I always have. And
it's amazing. It never gets old, man. I was like, put on some Smooth Criminal. It made me feel good just hearing it. But MCC, Metropolitan Crime Commission, is an outstanding organization. And what I love about it and the job that Rafi Guainetti does there is they're not only so credible and so dedicated and really are a great adjunct to our criminal justice system, but they're also really good about partnering. It's a region-wide organization. They work with us at the NOLA Coalition. So they quietly, I think, are one of the really heroic organizations in the region.
Yeah, you know, and I love their data-driven approach. They look at the data, they assemble it, they look at it, they analyze it, and they bring it forward, and it's very revealing, sometimes in a good way and sometimes in a not-so-good way.
Yeah, the data don't lie. I mean, right now I'm talking about them a lot because I actually just went on it before the show, and it's just stunning how far we've come over the past 3 years. I was looking at it versus 2022 when we started the NOLA Coalition. Homicide is down 57%. Armed robbery is down 65%. And carjackings are down almost 80%. It's a very different city to live in than just 3 years ago.
Yeah. No doubt, and what I like is that the trend has been continuing. We've had a couple little bumps in the road here recently, a little bit of an uptick, but that's not unusual at this time of the year. It's amazing how some of this really flows almost seasonally, and you see it over and over again. But we're excited about what's actually happening, and there might be a chance that this superintendent stays around for a while.
Yeah, look, Chief Kirkpatrick has been outstanding. The way that she's most often described to me by blue collars is a breath of fresh air. She's a cop's cop. She has their back. She's politically savvy. And it's working. I mean, one of the interesting things that I've noticed about Chief Kirkpatrick is that one of the challenges that NOPD had in the past was an environment of nepotism or favoritism, and it mattered who the chief was friends with and which ward he or she came from. And so when you bring in Chief Kirkpatrick, who is manifestly not from here and does not try to pretend that she says New Orleans the right way, that immediately kind of takes that off the table, and I think it lets everybody relax. And so I'm glad that she has, I think, publicly said she's interested in working for the next mayor, at least in the near term. That transition and that chance of sustaining this is a big deal for all of us.
No, absolutely. Let's pivot to the airport. They have been nominated for yet another recognition. Tell us about it.
Well, it's another recognition. This one is the Reader's Award at USA Today. They've been nominated for best dining, best airport bar for Bar Sazerac, best sit-down restaurant for MoFo. But I think the reason why I want to talk about this is I actually went to visit with Airport Director Kevin Dolio yesterday. And the first thing that I noticed when I came up the escalators and they opened up onto the third floor was just the shine of the terrazzo in the sunlight. They've just done a pretty remarkable job at keeping that place looking, you know, box fresh. And that's difficult. I mean, it's not just the terrazzo. You've got all this matte white paint, which anybody who has kids knows what happens to that. And so a big kudos to the maintenance crew out there that keeps everything from the floors to the restrooms functional. I mean, even like that weird paper thing on the toilet seat that kind of spins, those are even always stocked, which is, to me, that's like the bellwether of being on the maintenance game is the toilet seat covers. Because those are always the
folks, that's where Michael goes first in an airport, right? To that look.
Hey, Michael, come on out. There are people waiting. I'm like, I'm just checking each seat. But look, Kevin told me about the expansion plans for the airport. They're incredibly exciting. They're talking about adding 15 new gates over on the west side, which is kind of, if you know, it's Terminal A. So they're going to push down that way. They'll probably build a second terminal. There's going to be a new 3,000-plus space parking garage. It's still going to be a very compact airport. The runway capacity is more than enough. But we're way above projections for growth. They're now planning as close to 11 million passengers by 2041. We're at about 6 million right now. So, you know, it's a great problem to have, and I'm glad that the airport is getting in front of it.
Yeah. And it's just so critically important to everything right here. There's a direct line between their success and the success of the hospitality tourism industry, business travel, and just the list goes on and on.
Yeah, we're way over indexed in terms of our number of connections relative to our size. And that's essential because, you know, anybody that ever travels, making connections is lousy and it usually doesn't work. So having direct connections to almost everywhere in the U.S. and now having direct connections to Central America and overseas on the British Airways flight is absolutely critical. And when you look at the way the airport is sorting out, there's some really interesting bright spots. The BA flight does very well, continues to. Breeze Airways, we're kind of one of their four mini hubs. So they're not only increasing their flights out of our airport direct to places that typically didn't have direct flights, but they also have a maintenance operation at the airport. So that's creating jobs. We're doing well on the legacy carriers, doing well on some of the upstarts. Spirit Airlines is reorganizing for, I don't know, the third time this year, but they're not going away. I really love going to the airport and reminiscing about what it used to be and being glad that it no longer is, it no longer is that.
Yep. And Louisiana, believe it or not, folks, we have and we continue to pass bipartisan bills, probably more so than any other state in the country.
We've got this tradition of bipartisanship, which I think, you know, goes back for a long time because even though politics is a sport here, or given that it's a sport, we know we're all playing for the same team. Steve Scalise and Cedric Richmond kind of continued that both in the halls and on the field and personally. And now we have Representatives Troy Carter and Clay Higgins, which typically, you know, they don't go to the same parties.
That's the odd couple.
It is. I mean, this one makes Steve Scalise and Cedric Richmond look like identical twins. I mean, this is a truly, but what it shows, and this is what I love, they're coming together on what essentially is an economic development and criminal justice piece of legislation. And it shows that when you look at things through this lens of what's best for our people, you can often find these places of great compromise. So what this one does, it's called the TWICE Act, and it basically is going to speed up the process for getting people who are coming out of prison but who pass all of the tests, who have served their time, getting them certified to go work at ports, at shipyards, at refineries, where we desperately need workers. The TWICE Act is not going to change the criteria. It's not going to change who can get through it, but it's going to start the process when people are getting near the end of their term. And that's going to do two things. It's going to speed it up, and also it's going to allow individuals to have technical assistance so they can fill out the forms and get through the process. And I think that everybody looked at it and said, it's a win-win. We're going to get people who have served their time into good, productive jobs, and we're going to give this energy boom that we're now benefiting from the workers that it needs in order to keep on growing. So I don't know. It's you don't find these every day, but it really is exciting when you see folks come together to do the right thing. And I think it's going to pass.
Absolutely. Michael, the other night, I was looking through the NOLA by NOLA website, looking for the Michael Heck production. I did not find it. There were only 375 or 380 opportunities, and you didn't make the cut again.
Yeah, I have to take this one personally because I looked at some of what they have. They've got Big Frieda at the LPO. Okay, that's above my pay grade. Then they've got 90s music at NOLA Brewing. That is right in my sweet spot. So being excluded from that one, being left off the ballot, hurts. And then I was looking at another one. It was the Bat Club at the Rabbit Hole. Now, if I don't qualify for the Bat Club at the Rabbit Hole, then I don't know. I'm probably, Kamala Harris is probably saying mean things about me in her book. I mean, it's bad.
Well, let me tell you, it starts tomorrow. It goes through October the 5th. And if you can't find something that you want to see, you're just a person that can't be pleased.
No, that's right. And what I like about this, from a bigger picture standpoint, it's not coincidence that it's called NOLA by NOLA. That's a play off of South by Southwest, which was the music festival that really helped put Austin on the map as a place that was cool, not just for music, but for technology and for young people. And I don't want to put words in Walt LeJay's mouth, but I think that when him and his team were coming up with NOLA by NOLA and pushing it out, part of the idea was that it was going to create this destination that added to the brand of New Orleans and brings people here, as well as supporting our local club scene. So everybody come out, and I'll see you at Big Frieda at the LPO or maybe at the Bat Club.
I thought this was a first instance, but they've actually done that before.
Yeah, this has been going on since it was a COVID idea. I mean, it came out of COVID. I think it started in 21. And what they were trying to do was just to get some people and cash flow into our club scene that was dying on the vine because we actually weren't, you know, allowed to go for a long time. So it started as life support for culture, and now it continues to grow. And I think that we'll probably look back in 5 or 10 years and see this as a part of, as an indispensable part of our calendar, and one that people are now flying to from around the country to go and spend a week enjoying our version of South by Southwest, NOLA by NOLA.
I think you misunderstood. I was talking about Big Frieda and the LPO. I had missed that on the agenda before. Actually, they've actually performed together before.
Oh no, that one I did not know. Now, I've seen Zebra with the LPO, and that was pretty darn good. It was Zebra doing Zebra and doing Led Zeppelin with it. But no, I didn't know that Big Frieda was. I didn't know that she was so fancy like that.
Yeah, no, I've been to NOLA by NOLA for several years. It's a great time, great opportunity, and people should not miss it. Michael, it sounds like. I was listening to The Core on the Tommy Tucker Show the other day. Here we go again with saltwater intrusion.
Yeah, this is something that has been literally creeping up on us for a number of years. This is going to be the fourth straight year. And basically what's happening is a few things. One, that we've deepened the river to 50 feet, and that is something that is going to that slows down the river. Basically, it's just, it's bigger, so it goes slower, so there's less pressure keeping the water out. Also, the droughts that we're seeing upriver are reducing the flow. And then another part of this that folks are not talking about so much is Neptune Pass. which not only decreases the pressure downriver because it's taking off a huge volume of water. It's I think a top 10 biggest river in the country when it's flowing, but it's also allowing for saltwater intrusion. And the issue with the saltwater is that it doesn't just get into the drinking water potentially, but it can also corrode pipes. It can kill agriculture. It can threaten wetlands. So I think we have to pay more and more attention to this and figure out a permanent solution, because it's going to keep happening every year. And it's something that it doesn't have the, you know, the dramatic impact of surge from a hurricane, but it's a big concern. It's a real concern.
And as you point out in some of the materials, and I've heard you say this before, that prior to this year, prior to 2022, they've only built this sill three times, in 88, in 99, and in 2012, and they've done it 4 years in a row since 2022. So there's a direct correlation to what's happening with Neptune Pass and the flow in the river. But there's a significant reluctance to deal with that Neptune Pass challenge.
Yeah, one of the things that I understand is there's a possibility that the Corps will come up with some type of temporary closure so it can effectively be closed off when they need more flow and more pressure in the river. It's becoming apparent now that they're going to have to deal with it. I'm not entirely sure what the reluctance has been. I think to some degree, Newell, there was an environmental push that this was kind of demonstrating the power of the river and what it can do and how it can build land. And that's true. That's all well and good, except for two things. One is a lot of the land that was being built was the actual levee that was getting washed out into the bay. And the other is that this idea that the river is a natural river doing what it wants is just wrong. The river has effectively been a man-made canal for about 200 years. We've got the old river complex up at New Roads that diverts a good percentage of the river into its current channel, so it doesn't all flow down the Atchafalaya. It's a man-made canal. It's made this way for shipping, for transport, and so we're going to have to actively manage it. Otherwise, it's going to do what it wants to do, and New Orleans is no longer going to go down its current track. The Bird Delta is going to collapse. And we're not going to have shipping. So, we have to deal with Neptune as part of this, I believe.
Let's pivot real quick. One last thing I want to raise with you. Drew Brees being considered this year for the Hall of Fame as an inductee. I say he deserves to be in. Is this the first time he's being considered? Do you know?
It has to be the first time. Because I think we would have known about it offhand. And he seems to be a pretty obvious first ballot Hall of Famer, not just because of his numbers, but because of what he represented to this city in the years following Hurricane Katrina. I mean, he's a person who demonstrated not just excellence in sports, but the importance of sports as a metaphor for a city and as a source of hope and inspiration. So, yeah, I don't know exactly how the process works, but he seems to stand on his merits to get in first time. Everybody's going to be pulling for him. And is it true also he's going to be going and joining Stephen Smith in the broadcasting booth?
I heard something along those lines with ESPN, I think, right? One of the stations. These news cycles, they move so fast. Yeah, it is Drew Brees' first year of eligibility. Larry Fitzgerald was also picked, the receiver, who was incredible, his first year of eligibility.
Cardinals.
Yeah, 2026 Pro Football Hall of Fame. And it says that Drew Brees ended up as second all-time in yards, passing, and touchdowns. And Fitzgerald actually ranked second in career receptions and yards receiving. I think they probably both deserve to go in first time out for sure. All right, Michael, thank you so much. We got to get to a break. When we come back, we'll visit with our special guests. Stay with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Folks, welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc. And the following names: P Train Funk, Big Queen, Ode to Augustus, Bayou Cowboy. No, those are not the names of bands or musical songs. Those are the name of beers that are offered by our next guest. Tell us about it, Michael.
Yeah, if this was Jeopardy, I would say, what is Cajun Fire Brewing Company? This is great. We got a great guy, John Renthrope. He's a New Orleans native. He's an entrepreneur. He's a brewmaster. He started the company close to 15 years ago. It's a big deal. It's the first Black and Native American-owned brewery in Louisiana and the U.S. South. It's the first Native American-owned beer brand in U.S. history. And it's the second longest continuously operating Black-owned beer brand in the world. And most importantly, it's delicious.
Well, with that, John Renthrope, as Michael pointed out, New Orleans native entrepreneur and brewmaster, welcome to the show, John.
I appreciate you all having me. And that's why y'all are the professionals y'all are. I can't top that introduction. Thank y'all for having me on the show. I'm smiling ear to ear.
John, I love, you know, I'm a big wine drinker, and I love the wineries that come up with these crazy labels on their wine and the crazy names of their product. And when I started looking at your story, I was like, oh, my God, I love these names. They're just phenomenal. But tell us about, you know, you founded Cajun Brewing back in 2011. What drew you to become a brewmaster?
So I started the industry, and, you know, beer is like one of the oldest beverages in civilization. And when we, you know, I live in an area that was definitely devastated by Hurricane Katrina, and, you know, coming on 20 years of that, we created a company in the footprint of that. And when I looked at my skill set, I was brewing beer in my early 20s. I looked at the economic opportunities that existed with manufacturing beer and getting into food beverage, and took my hand at it. And I'm happy to say we're still operating now, 14 years later. We have definitely made a pretty sizable economic impact around the nation with our brands, and, you know, the community has definitely been supporting. So it's a unique journey.
Oh, absolutely. And obviously, when you look at the names of your beers, it's not hard to figure out that you are truly inspired by both Cajun, Creole, Indian, and African traditions. Tell us about that culture that is connected to the flavors and the names of the beers that you produce.
Yeah, at face value, it's a skew, right? But with us trying to make it organic and then trying to distinguish ourselves amongst, like, all the different brands that people have access to today, we thought the best way to go about doing that was to be truly authentic. So we don't have any kind of caricatures, anything like that with our beers. Normally, we try to use each product that we make to not only offer a traditional flavor profile, but also tell an organic story, something that's resemblance of New Orleans history and culture. Essentially, be a Trojan horse, because beer has its way of getting into every crevice of society. And we just try to magnify our great history that we find out here in Louisiana.
Now, you produce seasonal beers and then beers that the availability, I think, is throughout the year. And I was reading about the Big Chief Cream Stout, about milk stout beer. What is that exactly?
So a milk stout, I mean, most people's first introduction to a stout-style beer is like a Guinness. It's like the most consumed stout in the world. So with that, we wanted to make a stout that was year round. Normally, people associated with drinking stouts as being, especially with it being a dark lager, essentially, is all right. It has to be cold weather. It has to be snowing. We don't get that in Louisiana. And I love stouts. I'm a big stout advocate, and we wanted to make a stout that had a creamy backdrop to it, something that could pair with our culinary foods. You know, you got a lot of spicy Cajun Creole foods that the sensation when you're drinking a stout, if you don't have something that's a little smooth on the taste, it will create like a weird sensation that's not necessarily palatable to a lot of people. So we wanted to make a stout that you could drink year-round, something else with 5% ABV. Because we use vanilla bean in the stout, you get a nice aftertaste that's not really earthy. And definitely you'll taste those coffee notes, those caramel notes, chocolate, of course. And it's been a product that's been performing very well all around the world.
Yeah. And is your most popular beer Honey Ale, which is described as a Munich Amber style?
Yes, it is a Honey Ale. A lot of our beers, with distinction, we use honey and molasses. It not only extends the shelf life of our beers past 1 or 2 years, we get about 3 years out of our shelf life with our Honey Ale. I mean, honey is an ingredient that you buy and has an infinite shelf life. So it's the best ingredient to use, especially with inflation, everything right now to be considered. But also just from a flavor profile, it ramps up the complexity of a Honey Ale or traditional amber with it still being palatable. And it pairs very well with just about everything that's in a Cajun cookbook.
And folks, this is an interesting little detail. Cajun Fire is actually available in the Smithsonian. And you also export your beers to Japan, Spain, Peru. It's got to be incredible feeling about this national recognition and as well as internationally people enjoying your product.
Yeah, and that's a good question to ask about it, because I do have a lot of anxiety. I'm a relatively young entrepreneur. Our company is a first-generation company, and, you know, we're in a sea of a competitor that's like five, four, fifth generation. So for my product and to be in those spaces is really a blessing. And, you know, unbeknownst to us, when we started shipping our products to Asia, we didn't realize that they didn't really have a category for honey beer. So, you know, I was doing my normal song and dance, selling it, and it just started taking off. And it was very overwhelming, just the reception that we received specifically for that product.
Yeah. And I got to imagine one of the most rewarding things that you involve yourself in is you say that your company's mission is brewing for socioeconomic change one pint at a time. You're giving back to local nonprofits. If you would, tell us about the connection between brewing beer and obviously giving back and building community.
So when I first started brewing, because our economic landscape for breweries is pretty much wiped clean after Katrina, I had to like get mentorship mainly in like Midwestern towns, former steel mill reserves, areas like that. And I would see areas where they would put a brewery in the town center. And, you know, I'll visit the different cities periodically over the years, and you'll see a whole ecosystem of businesses be created around these breweries. And now it's kind of common fare. But, you know, when I got started around late 2008, that was something that was relatively new on the economic side of rehabilitating old areas. And now, you know, it's the fact that, you know, if you put a brewery in a space, you'll not only have a lot of jobs, STEM jobs. Normally people don't think about beer companies as a STEM manufacturing hub, but you have those jobs, and then you aggregate like transportation, logistics, other cultural arts. It's really in our DNA to be viable to our community. And in New Orleans East, specifically where we're headquartered and developing our brewery concept, that's where we see the most economic impact we can make.
Yeah, you're part of a major 10-acre development that's going to occur out there. Actually, I was reading some information about that. That sounds incredibly exciting for you and your company.
It is. It's, again, like our mission is brewing for socioeconomic change one pint at a time. For us, I think brewing beer, I'm a brewmaster by trade, and I very much view brewing beer as spiritual. And that's the kind of angle we take. We take it very serious because we do see it as being a job creator and something that can really revitalize the whole zoning district and hub.
Yeah. Finally, there's some kind of festival called Barrels on the Bayou that's coming his way in 2026. Is that obviously you guys are involved in that. What is that about?
Man, that is the byproduct of a proprietor named Dave Bracey. He started a beer festival in Pittsburgh that I'm normally a vendor at called Barrel on the Slow Fest. By me going there, I go to Pittsburgh so much I could probably wear my robe when I'm attending there at the festival. But it's always in August.
Hey, just don't wear a Steelers jersey, baby.
Nah, not that. I'm not going to perpetrate like that. I'll get exposed real quick as soon as I start talking. But anyway, I convinced the proprietor. I said, hey, man, you know, if you could do that there, why not host the Sister City version in New Orleans? We have definitely a lot of crowd that can support it. And, you know, it'll be a pretty cool thing for this national festival that's now won, like, multiple best craft beer festivals in America awards to come to New Orleans. So he took me up on it, came out here, enjoyed the hospitality. I shouted him out some different times I thought would be very apt to his festival. And we're all engines on. It's going to be April 17th to the 19th next year for 2026. It's truly one of the best beer festivals I've ever been to in my life. Sometimes I'm in the vendor space, so I try to duck off and enjoy it a little bit more.
Yeah.
But it's right now there's about 500 pre-sales from citizens from Pittsburgh that already bought tickets. It's going to be held at Lafayette Square and Gallia Hall. I think Barrels on the Bayou is the domain name that you can find the event, and it is something that you don't want to miss.
And did you say what time of year is it going to be?
It's going to be in April. April 18th.
In April?
I mean, April 17th to the 19th.
Yeah, remind me. I'd love to have you back on and talk about it. I mean, that sounds really cool.
I mean, it's going to create a lot of job opportunities for, like, not only food truck vendors, artists, as well as breweries, because they have a lot of collaboration products that you can only get at this one festival. And most importantly, it's going to have an economic impact of what we assume to be over $500,000 just in this first inaugural year alone for the state. And with, you know, the absence of, unfortunately, like a Buku Fest or a Voodoo Fest, we see it as having an ability to grow to that. So, you know, it's definitely something that's going to be pretty cool.
So, folks, just in case you're interested, some of the other names, Black is Beautiful, Big Queen, Ode to Augustus, Seed, Stalk, and Root, P-Train Funk, Bayou Cowboy, just to name a few. Any other new ones on the horizon?
We got a product called Aunt Ethel's Ether. It'll tell the story of my great aunt. So it'll be a doppel box. It's just like, you know, most people know about Shiner Box and things like that, a kind of a maltier beer. But it's going to have adult cherries infused in it. I'm a brewmaster, so I try to go and flex my skills, and we think this product is going to be amazing. It's going to showcase my great aunt who lived in Houma, Louisiana, and sold moonshine in the Southern Pacific Railroad. So I like to think, you know, I'm living my ancestors' wildest dreams with some of these things coming into the motion and market.
I love it. Congratulations to you and your entire team at Cajun Fire Brewing Company, and we wish you more success in the future, and I hope to meet you on April 17th out there at Lafayette Square for Barrels on the Bayou, a beer drinking festival.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. We're going to have a pint of tea. How are you?
All right.
Hey,
all righty.
John, we're going to honor this segment really soon, like at lunchtime.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. John Renthrop with Cajun Fire Brewing Company. We'll be back with Michael Heck's final thoughts when we return. Stay with us, folks.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Got a number of texts asking where you can get Cajun Fire Brewing Company beer. I know they have it at Total Wine. I've actually seen it there before, and I'm sure if you go to their website, they have other stores where they distribute their beer. We're back with Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc. What a great story, right?
It's a great story. He's a great guy, and you know he's just he demonstrates a lot of what makes a great entrepreneur. It's a good idea and inspiration, but then it's just drive. I just texted with him. He said he's up in Cincinnati right now at an event. You know, I think success happens slowly then all at once, and he's just been really good at pushing through, and he's got a good product. I on the break I was thinking about some names for Newell Norman beers. You want to hear them? There's some names we can do.
Oh, geez. All right. Do we want to do this, guys?
Do we want to do this? Yeah, this is good. So, the Long Arm Lager, right? Got that? Like long, right?
Yeah, got it.
And then this next one's kind of alliterates. Parish Patrol Pale Ale, right? That's a good one.
Love it.
And then the last one is very little, very direct. Just Newell Norman is stout.
Yeah, it's a good thing he doesn't consult with you.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. He definitely does not. No, he just uses me for my connections to Newell.
He's not in need of your help.
No, he's in need of my non-help, actually, as much as possible. That's our agreement. I agree. It's kind of like one of those things you get when you're estranged. Like I have to stay 15 feet from him. One of those type of deals.
So there is a stay away order there.
Yeah, exactly. Stay away. Do not disturb. Whatever it is, you know.
So, Michael, let's finish this this segment up today with you have been in D.C. several times in the last couple of weeks. In a general sense, what are you seeing? What are you feeling?
Well, look, you know, in a general sense, anytime you get up to D.C., it's always interesting because despite everything that is happening in the headlines, everybody there just kind of continues to work. There's been a lot of focus this last time federally on what to do about the budget and keeping government open. I think people recognize there's going to be some type of continuing resolution. And then I think the thing that we're most excited about that we're working on is we are working with a national coalition now to try to develop an all perils insurance that would basically combine flood into our regular homeowners, would cover everything, wind as well as flood, as well as other perils like fire and earthquake, and do it on a national basis so that the whole country can have affordable homeowners insurance, because it's not just a problem here in Florida. It's a national problem. And we think that there's beginning to be some appetite for looking at insurance differently, looking at homeowners insurance differently. So that's a big national project we're working on in D.C.
Yeah. How would you describe the climate? I mean, you know, we're kind of at a point right now, you know, another ICE facility shooting in Dallas this morning. No law enforcement hurt. We're not sure who actually. When there's one killed, two injured. We don't know who they are yet.
Yeah, we know about that.
You know, that continues to reveal itself. I mean, it seems like we're at a high tension friction point right now.
Well, I think that we are. You know, that was why I wrote that missive a couple of weeks ago that you read on air after the Charlie Kirk assassination. It was less about Charlie Kirk himself and more about the fact that we all need to back away from the precipice, and we have to get out of the echo chamber of social media, because the algorithm is not patriotic. It's self-interested. So when you talk to individuals, or even when you're walking the halls of Congress, things feel pretty normal. Life is going on as it always does.
But when you get back to the hotel room and you turn on CNN or you start doom scrolling on your phone, things seem apocalyptic. So it just, it's kind of a tale of two worlds. On one hand, things are going through normal political cycles. On the other hand, it does feel that, like I said in my piece, I haven't felt this way on edge like this since 9/11. And I'm not saying that any one of these shootings is the equivalent of Franz Ferdinand in World War One. But we do want to be careful, and we just want to be kind to each other. And that's why I, you know, concluded by saying, make eye contact, say hello, call an old friend. You never know when somebody can use a little boost and a little humanity right now.
No doubt, for sure. As always, we truly appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great time at the MCC luncheon today, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Noel. I'm heading on up right now.
All righty. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Arthur Sturbkyle, local real estate analyst. We'll talk about the impact of Tulane students being compelled to live on campus for the first 3 years.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.